Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Bring a little sunshine indoors with the exciting new arrivals in store or online at harrycurry.com. Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. The outlook just got even brighter with further reductions all summer. In store or at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Just an urgent message for the company. I think they're near Navan that are building the medals cabinet for the Olympic Council of Ireland. The initial order was for a decent-sized cabinet. Can you increase the dimensions, please? Because this morning, as you know, Robert Dixon and Sean Modelov, they won. Philip Doyle and Dara Lynch. I'm ahead of myself about Robert and John. Philip Doyle and Dara won another bronze medal. So that's another medal in the cabinet. And within the next 25 minutes, we hope Robert Dixon and Sean Modelov, who take part in the final race of the Skiff event, that they will be in the running for a medal as well. We will keep you updated. But let's start with something very serious. Tim Carr has contacted us. Tim, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
It's about Connolly Hospital. It used to be called James Connolly Memorial Hospital. It's now called Connolly Hospital in Blanchardstown, opposite the Blanchardstown Shopping Centre in Dublin. And you say when you got to the ED, it's now called the Emergency Department, the A&E, what you witnessed was horrific. What did you witness?
Well, I arrived there just a while ago. So in the hall. I arrived there just about 6:30 in the evening.
Okay.
And there was a big crowd in the A&E, and the staff were working exceptionally hard. And during my period of waiting there, which was about 4.5 to 5 hours before I got a bed, the staff had been abused. I felt them being abused quite a bit verbally, and that people were getting very impatient about not being seen and all that. And I think people just forget that the area we're in is A&E, accident and emergency. Emergencies have to be seen first.
Okay. But Tim, what percentage, ballpark, what percentage of the people in A&E were abusing the staff verbally or otherwise?
I would say about 7%.
Okay.
But there were the same people constantly up and down to the at the north end, giving them, using pretty foul language and that at them. I just thought it was absolutely despicable.
Okay, what were they saying to the staff in Connolly Memorial?
But why am I being seen here? I'm here so long. I'm here X amount of time now. I should be seen next. And that's better than to go straight through there now.
But hang on, I presume the fact that they were standing and had the full use of their limbs.
They were walking around the place. And they'd go down and they'd sit down for a while and you could hear these people getting aggressive with among themselves down there, and then they come up and they give the unfortunate medical staff abuse then about not being seen. They're here long enough, they should be seen now. And I think in this day and age, people should start really and truly start thinking about the A&Es and that, and the amount of pressure that our medical staff are under in these hospitals. Mm-hmm. They're doing an exceptionally good job. And they don't need that. If you go to an A&E section, you have to be prepared to take your place in the line. And accidents and emergencies, as it says, if an emergency comes in, if a person is in dire strait, in a terrible state, they have to be seen first.
Triage, yeah.
A person coming in with a cut.
Now the fact that these people obviously had the full use of their limbs, had the full use of their lungs, was that not a bit of a clue to them as to why they weren't top of the list to be seen?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because, I mean, I arrived there, as I said, the first thing that happened to me, I arrived in on a trolley because I had to arrive by ambulance, right? So I came in, they assessed me there and then, and the trolley was taken out, I was put into a wheelchair and I was connected up to all kinds of things and all that. I waited for a short while and I had various things done with me and it was decided I did need major attention within the hospital. and I was kept there. When the bed came available, I moved up to the ward.
But Tim, can I?
The other point I'll make to Joe is just like as well as that, even down to the point of the staff within the A&E, they went round with refreshments, as such, like tea or coffee or a fruit juice and a sandwich, and that. So people weren't being ignored.
And did anyone check these individuals who were being abusive? Did anyone say, "Will you calm down"?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, at one stage, one of the security people came down through the place and he said, "Look, please, will you go back and sit in your place? You'll be seen to that effect." And they did, but with a bit of abuse, they went back to their place.
And then they started again, effing and being out.
Yeah, and it just kept going on. I spent 3.5 weeks in a ward upstairs, Joe.
Okay.
Now, the care and attention I got up there from everyone, and I'm not going to mention any member of the staff or anything like that, but from the ladies and gentlemen that came in the morning to clean the place.
Brilliant.
To the ladies and gentlemen who did the catering end of it and served in the wards, to the nurses, to the doctors. Don't let anybody ever say we don't have an exceptionally good system, and the work that these people do is unbelievable.
And I just wonder Tim, what would happen to somebody if they did intervene and say to these people in A&E, "Listen, will you calm down? We're all in the same boat to a different degree or other."
Do you want to hazard a guess at that, Joe?
Or do you?
Well, I put it in this way: the aggressive tone that was being used.
Yeah, okay, so you've
there's anything to go by.
You'd be worried. By the way, were the staff behind one of these protective screens, or
most of them were? But the nurse, the administration at nurse, I would presume that would be probably her type, who was allocating and calling people. She was not.
Okay.
But there was other staff there with her. Like, she was perfectly safe.
Okay, but anyway, she wasn't behind the screen, which is a pity.
Yeah.
Okay, Tim, how are you, Tim? You on the mend?
I'm getting there, Joe. I'm getting there. And as I say, I just cannot thank the people in Connolly Hospital.
Well said. Okay, that's Tim Carr. 0818715815. The skiff update is the Irish pair, Robert and Sean, are slightly separated from the fleet. And they dropped to 8th place, but they have work to do. But there's another 20 minutes in it, and it's extraordinarily skillful, nimble. You're basically, your 2 feet are the only thing that are connected to the side of your skiff, and you're leaning backwards, and it's an incredible act of coordination between the two, between the couple, between the team, and anything can go wrong very quickly, and anything hopefully can go right very quickly. So we live in hope. Now, let's see if things will go right from Mary Bourne. Mary, good afternoon.
Good morning. Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
And when is your birthday?
The 4th is on Sunday.
Oh, it's on Sunday?
Yes, it is, yeah.
Okay, but you got a birthday card. This is a mystery.
I did, indeed.
This is a mystery. You got a birthday card.
Yeah.
In the post.
Yeah.
And had it got Mary Bourne's name on it?
No, what it had was my address and my postcode.
Okay.
So I opened it up and I was looking through it. There was a few bits and pieces in it.
Yes.
And it said to X from X. And then I said, "This is not for me at all." I said, "Crikey, Mike." Okay. I said, "This is not for me." So I said to myself, I said to my husband, I said, I don't feel good about this. Like, you know, the chances are, like, you know, that if anybody was... you know, got it. They should have got it, if you know what I mean, not me.
Okay.
I wouldn't feel good keeping it.
Okay, and what, can you tell us generally what's in it, the clue?
Right, okay, yeah. It's a birthday card, and inside it was 6 lottery tickets.
6 lotto tickets, okay.
Yeah, okay. Scratch cards.
Oh, scratch cards.
And then two scratch cards, 6 scratch cards.
Okay.
And then one for the lottery on Saturday and one for the Euro Millions tomorrow.
Oh, for this coming week?
Yeah, this coming week, yeah.
And was there anything else in the envelope?
And a air freshener for your car. Yeah.
Okay. Oh,
and I just felt bad, like, you know, it's a million and one chance.
Now, in fairness, you've sent us in the photograph of the inscription. And it does say, we won't give out the full name, but it is it's not Mary, your name, it isn't your name, it's a woman's name, a very unusual woman's name that begins with F and ends with N. Yeah. Six letters, two syllables. Two, happy birthday. We hope you have a great day. Love from four people, sign it again for privacy. We'll just call them. This is the initials. H-S, E and B. The H-S, E and B, if you follow me. The three names, the first name begins with H, second name begins with S, third name begins with E, H-S-E, and B is the fourth name. Do you know, Marie, anyone with that combination, any family, any group with that combination of H-S-E and B?
No, definitely no.
Okay, so say nobody comes forward. You see, the problem is if that lotto, if your ticket, I know the chances are zillion to one, but they are chances. If either of those lottery tickets, and it's for the Euro Millions as well, any of them come home, Mary, what would you do with the 8 million that you...
Well, you see, that's the predicament I'm in. Like, you know, it wasn't for me, and, like, I feel that the person that it was for, like, would be missing out.
Yeah.
And, like, I just wouldn't feel good because, like, I feel like, you know, it'll kind of bring you... bit of bad luck or whatever, you know, the kind of way. I just don't feel, I wouldn't feel good.
And the front of the card just says happy birthday.
Just happy birthday.
In usual typography. Any idea from the envelope where it might have been posted? I presume it was an Irish stamp.
It was an Irish era, Ireland,
Ireland, okay. And there's no postmark on a Portlaoise sorting office?
No, nothing like that, nothing at all.
It is a mystery.
No.
You want to return these to this? Is that a woman's name? That beginning with F. It's a lovely name, actually.
It is a nice name, actually. It could well be an Irish name, actually.
Yeah.
But I don't know. But when I said it, I saw it this morning, I was all excited, of course, when I saw all this lottery tickets and the scratch cards, and I said, "Wow!" And then that's not my name. That's not for me. Like, you know. So then I just discussed with my husband. I said, I wouldn't feel good like about this. Okay. I have to do something about it, you know.
And we won't give out the name, obviously, for but I will give out a little clue to people. If you look at the name of the person to who these gifts have been sent, if you were to give a clue in a cryptic crossword, in a cryptic crossword, the clue would be as follows. A far away grandmother. Okay, that's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
And whoever has that name will immediately recognise it.
Yeah.
And they hopefully will contact us on 0818 715 815, Joe at rt.ie, 51551 is text, and we can return. Return and in the hope before the draw. Now, are you, Marie, by the way, has anyone else sent you a birthday card?
No, not yet, would you believe? No, that's not so exciting.
No, hang
it was
on.
The first one.
Hang on. And when is the birthday again?
On Sunday.
Oh, tomorrow's the last day for posting.
And, I know.
And Marie, are you know when you're looking at a scratch card?
Yeah.
Would you be tempted to have a scratch?
Of course. Oh, yes, of course I would. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, you know, if anybody wasn't, like, they're not telling the truth, of course I'd be tempted, yeah. I like you know, backing a few horses now and again. I like doing a few bits and pieces.
Oh, do you?
Definitely,
okay.
I would be.
And do you play
the? Definitely, I would be.
Do you play the lotto?
I do. I don't do it all the time. No,
yeah,
I won't.
Okay.
I do it now and again. Yeah,
and you do the scratch?
I do. Yeah, I would do. Now, if I'm shopping, I do often go and get one or two. Or
yeah, that's
I would,
well.
Yeah.
They're all impulse buys. That's what they.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what they like. Now, if you did scratch, the cards. If you did answer that itch, so to speak, and there was €1,000 in one of the cards, you'd feel awful.
I would. That's what I'm saying. That's my point.
So I don't want to visit that on you, Mary.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't want it either. Because I would think it should be for the person that it was supposed to be for.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, at the moment, as the way things are going, I'm having a bad week anyway, so I'm telling myself, I don't want this to be on my conscience.
Well, what, you're having a bad week because you haven't got any birthday cards?
It's not at all. It's just something simple. My car's getting fixed at the moment.
Well, you see, I remember, what about this for a solution just after coming in on 51551 text?
Right.
Scratch the cards.
Yeah.
Okay, scratch the card. If we don't find the owner, obviously.
Right, of course,
Beginning with F, ending in N. Granny gone away is the clue. Harry and the H-S-E and B are the initials. If we don't find them, this caller is saying scratch the cards.
Yeah.
Okay. But But undertake, maybe have a swear a little oath beforehand that whatever winnings, you will donate half of them to charity.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, because it's not mine anyway.
Yeah, and then...
Of course you would do something like that.
Then the same. Now, not all of it. Fair play.
Yeah,
this is a canny listener. Not all of the half of it. And the same for the lotto tomorrow night.
Yeah. If nobody comes forward. Yeah.
Yeah, you would.
Oh, I would definitely agree with it. I mean, because, like, you know, I feel like it should go to something like that, all right, definitely. Like, you know, and
okay.
Have you ever, happens after that.
But now, are you lucky, Mary? Have you ever won anything on the prize bonds?
I am a lucky person.
Oh,
yeah,
hello.
I am, actually, Joe. I am a lucky person.
Tell us.
Yeah. Yeah. I go every so often. I bring a lady who's 92 to bingo.
Okay.
So I do. She lives in Ballyfermot, actually.
Right.
And I collect her and bring her to come to bingo. And every so often, we have a little win. So we do.
Excellent. Okay. And you believe, Mary, do you believe in luck and science and...
Oh, I do. Yeah,
not
I
walking,
do. I do
not walking under ladders and...
About that, but I do believe luck and, like, if things are to happen, they'll happen, you know, that kind of way.
Yeah. Now, I see by you said you think a bit of luck might be coming your way because of a white feather.
That's right. Yesterday morning, after the grandchildren went home, I was sitting out reading a book out the back garden.
Okay.
And next of all, I seen this.
Hang on,
break,
breaking news, Marie, from the Olympics.
Yeah, okay.
The skiff race has been abandoned. Because there's no wind.
Oh, crikey.
The skiff race has been abandoned due to low winds. We'll have to do it all again. That's brilliant.
Oh, that's...
That's brilliant, isn't it? We're in with a shout. Okay, let's start again. The skiff race has been abandoned. And the swimming in the Seine has been abandoned because there's too many tourists in Paris using the loo, basically. So they're going to have to move that somewhere else. But anyway, where's Padder? Padder feeling, Joe at RT.ie. Padder, you have a bit of advice for Marie.
Oh,
she's in a terrible dilemma there.
Well, she shouldn't get too overwrought with it, like, you know. But anyway, we had an experience once where we received a letter, right?
Okay, yes.
And we were trying to locate where the letter came from. And the advice that we got from Impostat at the time was to examine the stamp. If the stamp was bought as a single stamp from a post office, it would have a mark on it relating to that post office. If the stamp was bought as in a book of stamps, it wouldn't have that information on it. Now, as to what the markings are at this stage, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to get my fiddle tuned up because I'm going to the Fla and Wexford.
Oh, great, Padder. Now, Padder, you found this out from Impostat because did you get a misdirected letter?
No, it may not have been a misdirected letter, but we have a number of friends with the same Christian name, right?
Yeah.
And we were trying to identify which of the people it came from.
Okay. And did you ever?
You know what? I don't think we did.
Okay. Because I don't know whether... I don't know whether you've seen this. It's a fantastic movie. I mentioned it. Wicked Little Letters on. It's on Netflix, actually, if you're lucky enough to have Netflix at the minute.
We're not privileged enough.
Okay. It'll be on. It'll be a great Christmas night movie. Olivia Colman and the brilliant, brilliant, brilliant Jesse Buckley. Both of them are brilliant. But anyway, how they caught... Oh, sorry. No, I can't do that because I'd be giving the thing of the movie away, wouldn't I? Spoiler alert. But it had to do with the stamp. You're right.
The stamp, if it was bought as an individual stamp from a post office, it would have a marking on it relating to that post office.
Yeah. Have you got the envelope near you with a magnifying glass, Marie?
No, this was years ago, Joe.
No,
we don't even keep checks that we got years ago.
Yeah, okay. Now, Marie, can we go back? Padder, good to meet him, Olga. That's Padder Field. Padder, where would you be playing in Wexford at the weekend? Where can I find you?
Oh, I'll be all over the place, Joe. Like, you know, trying to get a few bob together.
And what when you play on the streets of Wexford during the Fla, do people give you a few bob?
No, I chase people when I play. they head for the river.
They head for Enniscorthy. They head for the ferry in Rosslare. And I know it's on in Wexford town, obviously. But is there music around the county this weekend on account of the Fla, like Gorey, Enniscorthy?
No, I'd say it will be mainly concentrated on Wexford Town.
And where do you all get accommodation if it's so busy?
I have an old camper, Joe, and a tent, and that suits me.
Okay, good man, good man. Well, rosin the bow and off you go, Pater. Off you go.
Right, give me.
Have you got it there? Have you got it there beside you?
No, I don't.
You're lucky, because I would have had you, I would have had you playing it for the day that was in it. Okay, Pater, good to meet him. Safe travelling to Loch Gorman. Dermot Wisely, Dermot.
Desmond, Joe.
Oh, Desmond, sorry. Desmond.
Yeah. Joe, you should be able to, with that's with scratch cards, when the lottery companies send out the scratch cards, say, to Fragment Sector, to Joe Duffy's shop, those scratch cards have to be scanned in the machine to let you see you have them. So those cards, the lottery should be able to tell you where those cards were actually sold, because there's a barcode on them.
Excellent.
That's from the scratch cards only.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Because let's say for argument's sake, if the cards are sent out to Joe Duffy's shop and they were stolen, somebody just can't scratch them then and then claim the winnings. Have to be scanned in the shop before they're put for sale to let you know that you've received them.
So what are you suggesting Mary should do?
Well, get on to the lotto and give them the code at the bottom of them and see where those scratch cards were sold, what shop were they sold in, and then the shop should know who bought the 5 tickets plus the... Obviously, they bought a card in that shop, and they bought 2 tickets.
All right.
Local shop.
What about that idea, Marie?
Yeah, that sounds good. Should we go down any avenue that helps? Like, you know, I don't mind. I'll try anything. Like, you know, because at the end of the day, like, you know, the chances are, as you say yourself, there's probably nothing on any of the scratch cards or on the actual tickets for the lottery and Euro Millions, but the chances are it might be. So you know what I mean. You take that chance in life anyway, don't you?
Yeah.
So
it'll pinpoint the actual shop.
Yeah, lovely. That's great. That's fantastic. That's great bit of information. Thank you.
Okay. How are you keeping, Desmond?
Keeping good, Joe. Keeping good.
Do I reckon? Side out. Are you the Desmond that was on me before?
Yeah. I'm halfway there, anyway, Joe.
You know, you know what I'm going to ask you, don't you?
Yeah.
How'd you get on? How'd you get on in court?
The dangerous driving, Joe, I got a not guilty, and on the criminal damage, they want to retry me again.
Okay, so on the dangerous driving, you were charged with dangerous driving. You reversed your ecclesiastical truck into the gate of the Russian embassy. Isn't that correct?
Yes, that's correct. That's correct, Joe, yeah.
And okay, you were found. I've corroborated this because I looked it up and I saw your name. You were found not guilty on that charge of dangerous driving.
Correct.
And
a hung jury on the other charge.
That will see its course anyway. And you reversed your truck, and as a protest against the war in Ukraine. So you did it during Liveline one day. We were happening. By the way, is the truck back on the road? I know you sell candles and ecclesiastical.
Yeah, it's on the road the next day, Joe.
Okay. And when people hear dangerous driving, they think it was on the road. It wasn't on the road. You were actually making a protest about the invasion of Ukraine.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Okay, Desmond, onwards, and thanks for that advice. That's Desmond.
No matter, Joe.
That's Desmond Wisely, Marie Bourne.
Yeah.
Hold on and see, can we see, we'll just hold off until 5 to 3 and we might scratch them at 5 to 3. Together.
Together.
Okay.
Okay.
See you later.
Thanks,
see you
take
later,
care,
Marie. God bless you. Happy birthday.
Bye-bye.
Happy birthday.
Thank you very much.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie. Frank Brown is in Temple Ogan, Dublin. Frank, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
And I know you're a permanent deacon in Ballyroane Parish in Rathfarnham. What does that mean in the Catholic Church, Frank?
Well, I'm a social worker during the week, and at the weekends I help out. Essentially, I help the priests. I might do the baptisms. I'm doing them all in Rathfarnham and Churchtown this weekend. But maybe it's helping out at funerals. Anything I can do, technically a lay person could potentially do, but things like baptism would be a little bit different. But really, there's about 30 of us now in the Dublin Diocese. It was brought in by Dermot Martin,
who I know
you've interviewed several times.
I know Dermot McCarthy as well. He was one of the first
permanent
deacon. Yeah, great guy. I've known him for decades. Frank, can you obviously you can't say much, but can you do funerals?
Yeah, so basically, I'm sure most people know this, a priest becomes like Jesus at Mass when the Eucharist, and also in confession. But it's a low-level kind of clerical position. So the church allows a deacon to baptize, to marry, believe it or not. And generally we would have done training and theology, so we'd have the same kind of theological trainings, and we'd be helping out in parishes as volunteers, really. But and we work alongside our lay parishioners who might be catechists, okay, pastoral workers in the diocese. It works very well. I mean, I'm obviously an older person now, so it complements my day job, which is in social work. Mm-hmm. Actually, I'm a social worker in Ballyfermot, where okay, you're from yourself.
And I think if it's the same, Frank Brown, were you not once chairman of the Irish Association of...
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
well, I don't know you. Okay, so well done. So, God, I would have thought you'd be winding down, Frank.
Well, it was either that or take up golf. But
did you decide to become to study, and you became a deacon?
Well, like a couple of classmates of mine, at 18, I'm sure your older parishioners will know, it's actually quite a common thing in the 80s for young men to think of being priests or religious life. A lot of my psychiatric nursing colleagues spent some time in John of God's. And most lads, because in those days, up to about the early 90s, vocations directors visited schools and said, "Are you guys interested?" And it's all very interesting. I suppose I secretly wanted to be a social worker, and the idea of helping out. And I went to England and worked for a number of years and came back and got involved in my parish. And I mean, I suppose you have that sense that it gives a real sense of meaning. I mean, even at work, I mean, I sometimes help out with funerals of patients. And there was a big funeral in Ballyfermot the other day, and you could see how important. I mean, the church was packed, and most of those people don't come to church very often. But they have that sense that there is more to life. And then at baptisms, the churches are full. There's a queue, there's a waiting list till the end of the year in Rathfarnham for baptisms.
And apparently there's only... I know Don Devaney as well from Ballyfermot.
Another great guy.
But Frank, apparently there's only one student studying for the priesthood for the Dublin Diocese at the minute.
Yeah, there's about 4 or 5, if I'm not mistaken, men training to be permanent deacons. There's probably a few reasons for that. I mean, the article I wrote in the Irish Catholic, which talks about, you know, safeguarding our vulnerable priests, which we probably will talk about later. But it's like I was involved in my local school, you know, in the parents' associations, and we often have getting guest speakers in talking about careers, and a bit like social work. Very few boys at 18 want to be social workers, but quite a few when they're in their 20s will think about it, because they work in homeless services. But the church, quite rightly, does not go knocking on schools and saying to 18-year-olds, would you like to train up? I happen to pick up a book. I know you know Brian Darcy. Mm-hmm. I happen to pick his 2006 autobiography. And it was just a fabulous read, not only about the country and Western singers, but just about his journey and how out of date it all was for young men of 17, 18. So who knows for the future, but clearly, and we have a lot of overseas people, like there's no shortage of priests world, but our men, and there's no shortage at the moment, but most of our men, as you know, are in their 80s. In their 70s, rather.
And the other campaign as well, led by people like Mary McLeese, is that women should be allowed to become deacons, but that's not on the horizon, is it, unfortunately?
I think it could be. I know very few people who... Like, we had that synod. Do you remember when every parish was asked for their opinions? And while people, parishioners, weren't screaming for married priests, they were pretty much screaming for married deacons, a bit like myself, because women, like I am on a baptismal committee, women are fantastic. Obviously, women are, if you go into the Dublin Diocese, you'll have a team of women working behind the scenes. We have child protection teams. There are women social worker working there. Women are hugely important. And unfortunately...
But that's an article process. There was one paper so far, wasn't there, from the synodical process, which was not positive about women deacons, if I'm correct, or indeed the role of women in the church. Anyway, we won't get into that. Sorry, Frank. Don't go on there. Okay. Yeah. So, Frank, but the piece you wrote and the reason you want to talk is that you think that and I know you're on the safeguarding committee, but you think that priests themselves are, which is understandable. They feel at times they're under this lingering, you call it, this lingering cloud of suspicion. What do you mean?
Well, I've been helping out, particularly the last 3 years, and because I might help out at a funeral, I meet older men, like the priest might be on holidays, and he'll get a retired missionary, or there'll be some elderly men who'll help out. And you get chatting, as you do,
yeah.
And they'll often talk to you about how awful, you know, some of them have worked in schools, and just how awful the whole experience was. So one of the saddest stories was this lovely old man spent his whole life, bearing in mind people who joined a seminary or a religious order at 18, spent his whole life training for 7 years, went to Africa, came back, obviously for holidays, but retired maybe, priests only retired 75, comes back. And he's at one of his relatives' funerals, and at some stage he goes to visit, and he's at the grave with his two little nephews. This is a few years ago, and he's wearing his clerical garb, and he can see people looking, and suddenly he has a panic attack, and he thinks they're looking at me, and because they think maybe I'm one of these guys, and that was a lingering message for me, and that. We know statistically, you interviewed Dermot Martin on Would You Believe? Meaning of Life, I beg your pardon.
Yeah,
Meaning of Life. And he talked about, obviously he did fantastic work, but he talked about, in his opinion, around the Murphy report from 75 to 2004, there were, in his opinion, up to 7%. And so there's an argument it's a little bit less, a little bit more in Dublin. So, and at the moment, even Patsy McGarry wrote a good piece in 2016 that there are almost no new abuse allegations of priests currently in ministry, with some historical ones. So basically you have 93% of priests, bearing in mind, have given 40, 50 years of their life to ministry. And what really winds me up is when I'm at work and I talk to my young social work colleagues and we talk about bits and pieces, and I said, well, how many priests do you think abused? They never ever have less than 30%. If I'm at a GA pitch, which I do with my kids, they're a little bit older now. So there's this notion that 30%, that's basically one in three. And I know that there was good reasons not to challenge it. It was the policy of the diocese not to challenge it for respect. But there does come a point that facts, and I've certainly argued on my safeguarding committee, we need to proactively promote these facts, because when it's a bad report, they get publicised nationally, quite rightly. But I suppose it's in terms of fairness, and I think most people are fair-minded. That was the reason.
You're
really
saying the perception of the amount of individuals who would be guilty of abuse in clerical garb is actually much greater than the reality. That's your point.
Okay. The amount is much lower. So basically, at the height,
the perception is much higher.
And if you ask any of your listeners, what percentage of priests do you think in Dublin or wherever abused young people? And of course, we all know, even the sad case of Bishop Casey, we all know that a paedophile abuses many. You know, a father who abuses his daughter doesn't do it once. So it was a small number abused an awful lot of children. And, of course, the governance of that was a disaster. But, obviously, that has been changed.
When we talk about percentage, we have to talk about the child, as we've been discovering in the last week, discovering in more harrowing ways. The child is 100% affected by it. But, anyway, Frank, do you think certain priests these days might not wear the clerical garb or the white collar in public? For fear?
Well, initially, I would say, fear as in the sense of just not wanting hassle. So, for example, obviously, socially, I mean, bishops don't wear clerical garbs when they go shopping in Tesco. You know, that's a fact. And also, it's not just because a lot of priests in the 70s and 80s didn't particularly want to wear the clerical garb. But the reality is, if a priest, you can be hassled for people, I suppose, maybe looking for money or whatever. But there is a lingering there is a lingering sense that if they're out socially with their family and relatives, like you get to a certain age and you get close to your relatives, your nephews, your nieces, you might go to a football match, there's that sense, it's starting to go, but the point I also made was we have very few children's ministries in Dublin. Anything we do with children, obviously mum or dad is present, and we have obviously lay people who help organise things, you know, baptism or confirmation. But the policies are really robust. Like, I work in the HSE, and I'm involved in GAA. If you go to any church, everybody who works with children is checked.
In the foyer of every church, there's names, phone numbers. And, it's incredible, yeah.
And there's training, and I get Garda vetted every 3 years in my voluntary role in the diocese. I haven't been Garda vetted probably since I took up my current post. So I know the church had to get its act together, and all I'm saying is it certainly has. And we have two full-time social workers, we have a full-time training officer, we have lay people who oversee. If you go into a sacristy, you have to sign a sign-in book. And now it's not just for children, it's for vulnerable adults. So that nobody we know is allowed to befriend an elderly person. Nobody can give communion to an elderly person unless they're known to the family or they go in twos. Because there's financial abuse, and this is the whole thing about safeguarding. We need to safeguard everyone. And sometimes when a priest is on the altar, he can be 80, and people don't actually see him as a guy who's 80, who's bad on the legs, who basically has given most of his life to helping people, and maybe his day off he has a bit of fun with his friends on the golf course or goes for a meal and his family, the families know what they're like, and most parishioners know. Mm-hmm. Most parishioners couldn't name a priest they know who abused children, you know. I mean, I know there's some awful cases in Ballyfermot, but most people, but yet there's this message, because it's continually in the media, and the church itself has to be more robust in saying, look, this is the fact. This year there were 4 allegations. This year, 3 were retrospective. 4 of the priests are dead. That's the type of information people need to hear, and then they can judge. They can then, and that's what I do at work. You know, we have a preliminary invest. If I do something wrong at work, my manager and someone else will say, "Look, we'll suss it out to see. Look, is there something here? Did that patient, is he right to give out about Frank?" And they'll say, "Oh well, you know, you raised your voice, or you had to admit someone under the Mental Health Act." So I think it's just fair is fair.
Okay. What about? I don't know whether you heard the statement from, read the statement from the Diocese of Galway about the resting place of Bishop Eamon Casey.
I read some of it on the holidays.
What did you think of that statement?
Well, I think they want discussion. My understanding is Bishop Casey is buried in the crypt.
He's not, so buried. He's not buried. Well, he's not buried. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
So he's not on public display.
The crypt is open at different times of the year to the public. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I was on holidays like yourself. I was in the cathedral in Bristol, and they had Bristol, as you know, was a big slave trading area. So they have loads of monuments to slave traders who donated money. And what they've done there, they're struggling with that. They have a whole display about slavery in the cathedral in Bristol, and they actually say, we are struggling to know what to do with these monuments, and they're asking for advice. Anyone who visits can express their opinion. Do you remove it, or do you put a sign up to say X, Y, or Z? So in a way, I know the Taoiseach said we have to listen to the victims of abuse, but also the parishioners who visit Galway, they need to say, like, my sense is something has to be done. There's no doubt about it, whether it's a small plaque or whether it's something more drastic.
Okay. Frank, good to meet you, Margaret. That's Frank Brown, a permanent deacon in Ballyroan Parish in Dublin, also a long-standing and senior social worker. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Experience summer comfort for less. Explore our sale on curtains and bedding. Perfect time to update and freshen your home.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
We didn't get to all the twins and identical twins and twins and triplets that we were due to talk to yesterday. One of them is Senator Eileen Flynn and her twin, Sally. Eileen, good afternoon.
Hey, Joe. Thanks for having us on your program.
I didn't know. I've seen your course in the Shannon so many times, but I didn't. Well, why should I know that you're a twin? You have no choice, but your take on being twins is slightly different and fascinating. Is it something your mother said to you, Eileen, about twins? One will lead and protect.
Yes, and then during college and school, you would hear that around siblings as well, how there's always the caregiver, and usually it's the eldest in the family. But when it comes to twins, it's a little bit different, because one of them does the minding and the looking after and making sure that the other is okay. But for me and Sally, that was actually... us growing up as children, where after our mother died, I took on the responsibility of making sure we get to school, washing the uniforms, doing Sally's tie for school. Just the simple things, that looking out for her always.
Wow. And Eileen, would you do things that you wouldn't let Sally do? Do you follow me?
Yes, actually, I am, and I'm not proud of it. I started to smoke at the age of 12, and I wouldn't leave Sally do it.
Wow.
Even like in her 20s or teens, I wouldn't leave her smoke.
Wow. Well, yeah. And do you still smoke yourself, Eileen?
Unfortunately, I do. Yeah.
Okay, I can hear your regret. But anyway, you do your best. I'm sure, like everyone, it's hard. They are hard to give up. Is Sally there? Sally is somewhere else, obviously, at the minute. Sally, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
How are you keeping, Eileen said, okay, you were born minutes apart as twins.
That's right. Yeah.
But did you always think that Eileen played the mammy figure?
She did. Yeah, Eileen is a great woman in general, and always was a great leader. But in fairness, I was always an independent woman myself as well. But we worked greatly together as a team.
Yeah.
You know, and even with regard to like school, I'd babysit and I'd get the money and I'd give Eileen the money for the cigarette so she'd go to school. You know, to keep her there, like.
Wow.
Yeah.
Eileen, is it a very close bond?
We do have a very close bond, yeah.
That's Sally, yeah, Sally.
Yeah, I imagine it's more of the gut as well. Like in 2000, I was in a very bad car crash.
Okay.
And Sally would have went in and told my father there's something wrong with Eileen.
Way before...
The guards or the fire brigade went in to tell me that.
Wow.
Sally would kept saying it to him, there's something the matter with her. And actually just recently when my lung collapsed, Sally kept ringing me for days before, and even during the, when I found out my lung was collapsed, she rang me and she kept saying, there's something the matter with you. And I was like, oh wow, you know, I'm hearing my lung is collapsed. So it's very strange. Now, while Sally be very independent,
okay,
and the same as myself, but it's always that guiding, making sure that we look after each other, you know. And even like in third year in secondary school, I remember home economics. Sally's task was an apple tart to cook, and mine was an Indian curry.
Lovely.
And actually Sally's was the Indian curry and mine was the apple tart.
Okay.
And I remember saying, oh God, she never pull off that one. So we just switched really fast before we told the teacher what our task was, and Sally still ended up burning the apple tart.
Ah, Sally. And Sally, do you think you have a sixth sense?
Yeah, huge one, Joe. Yeah, even like when Eileen would be, I'd be able to kind of tell if there was something the matter. And even with our children now to date, I'd be able to like ring or ask her how they are. And I've even a special bond with our two girls, Lacey and Billy, you know.
And but Sally, is it a sixth sense just about Eileen and the family, or is it about others?
I just think it's about Eileen now, to be fair.
Okay.
Yeah.
But does that mean Sally, you worry a lot?
I would, yeah. I think like most sisters and brothers would, you know, I'd worry a lot for her and say like, if she was doing a talk and order a business or something in the Shannon, and I'd be saying, oh, Jesus, I hope to God she does a good job today, or, you know, like,
but
she, no doubt, I don't ever doubt her, you know. And if I found her, if I was listening to her talk, say, the night before, or we were having a chat, like, we do kill each other, but yeah, I wouldn't let anyone else say or do anything. Do you know what I mean? Nobody else can say anything about her, or, but we have a very special bond. And
the two of us, have degrees in community and youth, in Maynooth. Two of us care very deeply around social justice and equality, but Sally does it in on the ground with young people. I've done it on the ground with older and in communities as well, just like Sally does. And sometimes we have our political difference. We won't speak about our political difference on the radio, but it's not very different, you know. So, like as Sally said earlier, we have our own minds, but again, it's that protecting each other, making sure at all times we're okay and stuff. And it'd be like that with Sally. If Sally was having a bad day, or like, thankfully, nothing dramatic has ever happened to Sally in the way, like me with the accident with the lung and stuff. So, but again, it's that, it's like I have three kids in a sense.
Okay. And Eileen, what age were you, obviously, and Sally as well, when your mom died?
We were 10.
Wow.
Yeah. And we were 26 when our dad died. So, like, we all, that's a good thing about twins, and it's special about twins.
Yeah.
And even with Daniel and Nathan in the last few weeks we've been hearing, you know, it's having that support of each other.
Yeah.
Like, I know I would have never completed school without Sally being there, even though I took the rap for many a thing she did in school. But and it's the same with Sally as well. So it's brilliant having that person. Now, sometimes it can be a torment, you know, people get us mixed up. People would never say, how are you, without saying, oh, how is Sally, you know? But it's lovely as well. And me and Sally, thank God, even growing up as children, we have good relationships with people that we met along life's journey. You know, so we've done a lot of positive work together as well. But yet now I wouldn't have Sally working with me in the Shannon. Or she wouldn't have
would
me
not?
Working
okay.
with her.
Okay.
No.
Okay. Oh, Eileen, given what you mentioned, that given I was listening to, I think it was a government, it was Thomas Bourne with Anya this morning, Anya Kerr, on the morning programme, the slot that Claire has. And he mentioned months in terms of a general election. He said that there'd be a general election the next few months. If someone said, but he said the next few months. I thought it was the next year, but the next few months. Eileen, how was your period? How have you enjoyed your time in the Shannon, or how have you experienced it?
Oh, I've absolutely loved every minute of it. Loved the platform, using it for positivity. Like yourself, Joe, I was born and reared in Ballyfermot.
Yeah, I know where you were.
And the Houghton site there. Yeah. And, you know, to be able to show that there's no right or wrong way to be a member of the traveller community, to break down those stereotypes. I'm not just a traveller. I'm somebody who has an interest in politics, somebody who loves being an activist around justice and equality.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Shannon gives me that platform to do so. And most importantly, it's getting some work done as well. I sit on the Disability Matters Committee, Education Committee, and the Traveller Committee. So it's just been an absolute pleasure.
Right. So
I've had more positive...
Great. So you hope to return to the Shannon? Or even the Dáil, maybe, Eileen. Why not?
Well, I wouldn't stand in the general election, but in the Shannon, I would put myself forward.
And why would you not stand in a general election? Is it the...
I think if I was based in Ballyfermot, I would. But I'm based in Donegal.
Okay.
That's like, you know, like Ballyfermot, people look after their own, so does Donegal.
Well said, Eileen. And that's a compliment as well, in one sense. Sally, yeah. Sally, do you worry sometimes, because Eileen has a very high profile, and anyone that has a profile in politics in Ireland, regardless of who you are, gets abuse. Do you worry that Sally, that Eileen might get abuse?
I often did, Joe, say like she'd have a late night in the Dáil, you know, like with regard to bills or laws or something. Yeah. And I wouldn't come home, I wouldn't sleep until she'd be home, you know. And I'd be worried about her, yeah. But like, you know, but sure, you get them people, don't you?
Yeah, get them everywhere. Get them everywhere. Yeah. Well, Sally, where are you? You sound very, you're in a windy spot.
Well, I am. I'm on a bus with young people, and they're staying very good for me. They're very quiet and all the rest of it. So.
And where are you bringing them?
Well, we're just after coming back from the Rock of Dunamaze and the Corre. So, yeah.
Okay. Fair play to you. You're great. You're great. Okay, you know, Sally and Eileen Flynn. Sally and your family, Eileen and your family, your own children and extended family. Thank you both. You're a tonic. Where's Niamh Fitzroy? Niamh, Joe at RT.ie, 5151 text. Niamh. Niamh.
Hi, Joe. How are you doing?
And I know you're one of three.
I'm one of three, yeah. I'm one of a triplet, yeah. Three girls. And my mum and dad have twins as well, a boy and a girl.
Okay. So was there a special connection?
I suppose, like, we didn't know any difference, you know, from growing up until even now. So we're all really close in age. There is less than a year between the five of us.
Wow.
So, yeah, we're extremely close in ways. Absolutely.
Oh, so there's a set of twins and triplets within a year.
Yeah, my mum and dad had my brother and sister, Emma and Barry, first in March 82. And then she had the triplets, three girls, in January 83.
So your mother had gave birth to five children within 10 months.
In 10 and a half months. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, she's a superstar, and my dad's too. But
and
yeah.
she's still with us, I hope, your mother.
Both of them are still with us, yeah. Going strong.
When would she be elevated to sainthood?
Oh, I think she should already, if not now, you know. And my husband is actually a twin as well.
Okay.
And his mother is a twin.
Okay, give me your mum's name. What's your mum's name?
My mum is called Mary.
Mary, and your dad is called, just want to...
My dad is Noel, yeah.
Mary and Noel, okay.
So, yeah.
So Mary and Noel, listeners, had five children. Five babies.
Babies, yeah.
Under a year.
Under 1 year, yes. All natural as well, Joe.
And all natural. And what... How do they manage? Five babies under a year.
They just had to. They just had to.
I know, there's no, I say it myself, you have no choice, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. My mum is a stay-at-home mum, and my dad just had to work, you know, every hour that came, you know. So they just made it work.
Yeah. I know, we had three together, three at the one time. I know how I managed.
Well, my mum listens to you all the time, and she actually texted me, and she said, will you tell Joe that when you're... triplets are born, that we were making our confirmation.
Oh,
so she just wanted me to let you know that.
Okay, great memory.
Yeah.
Fair play to her. And are you still, at the five of you, I'm now thinking about the five of you, Niamh. Are the five of you very close?
We would be all very close, yeah. Like there's one boy between four girls, so he keeps us all in line still, you know. But we would be all very close, yeah, you know. And if there's something up, we kind of pull together like any other family, you know.
And you're so lucky, and long may you continue that Noel and Mary are still there at the head of the household, because it's a great fulcrum, it's a great meeting point, isn't it, when you have... I've noticed that now since my own mother passed nearly 3 years ago now. She was the meeting point, but that goes, and things change. But Noel and Mary, are they still hale and hearty? Apart from being exhausted, are they still hale and hearty?
Yeah, they are. There's plenty of grandkids keeping them busy now at the moment, and they're doing great, you know.
And when you say to Noel and Mary, Mum and Dad, how did you do it? How did you manage?
They just, I think my mum says parts of it are kind of like a blur to her now at this stage,
feeling,
you know,
but
you know, I think my mum gets more compliments than my Jazz. You know, my Jazz is there too, so he reminds us of that, you know. But they just got on with us, you know. It was back in the 80s. It was a different time and different period as well. Yeah. And they just got on with us, you know, and they did a good job, so...
And did you have grandparents that helped out? Did you have aunties, uncles, friends?
We did, yeah. A lady actually helped my mum. She used to come to my mum every day in the house. She just volunteered. Dad was out working. My mum didn't drive, so I think my grandmother, she got the bus up from Walkinstown up to Clondalkin, which is where our home house is.
Okay.
And she gave a dig out where she could, you know.
Fantastic, fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, that's good news, and many years, well, to all of you, but many years of happiness and health to Noel and Mary. They're two remarkable people. I know you all are remarkable, but I just think having five babies under 12 months.
And like, you know yourself, they say it skips a generation, but
yeah,
it didn't. Like,
no, there's no
twins. My mum's brother and sister are twins as well, and there's cousins that are twins my mum's side, and... You know,
For anyone that's expecting three children together, triplets, what advice would you give them? Maybe I should be asking your mother.
Yeah, you probably should. But look, we've all gone on and had our own kids, and we've all had single births and stuff like that as well. So, over both sides of the family, and I suppose look, if it's your first, you might be better off having twins for your first and. You know, getting it done and justice as well, you know.
Yeah, you might have, anyway, sometimes no choice. But anyway, there's lots of hints and tips. The first thing, do not buy a triple buggy. Do not buy a triple buggy.
Absolutely.
After about
not.
4 weeks, you won't be able to move it, and you're just attracting attention. Do not buy a triple buggy. Okay, Niamh, good health to you and your extended family, and to Noel and Mary. God
Thank
bless
you very
them.
Much,
God
Joe. Can I just give a shout out while I'm with you there? Is that okay?
Yes.
Can I give a shout out to Bannon Tea Bakery in Catherine Street in Limerick? It's my husband's family business. And also to Fleming Medical here on the Jock Road where I'm working as well. So just a big shout out to everyone there.
Okay. Great stuff.
Thank you very much, Niamh. Thanks
indeed. Joe at rte.ie 51551. Would I just remind people about scams? And they're going around. And the reason I ask people to tell us about scams, especially online scams or any type of scam, is that we'll save others from. But I know somebody who was scammed. Thankfully, she spotted it in time, but there was money already got out of her account, but she got the money back, thankfully. And she was scammed because she got a phone call from somebody saying they were ringing from Revolut. Now, as you know, Revolut are getting bigger and bigger. They have a great reputation. They're now encouraging people to pay your salary into your account or whatever. But Revolut on their website say quite categorically, quite clearly, we do not ring our customers ever. We do not ring. So if you get a phone call from somebody pretending they're from, saying they're from Revolut, you just say to them, thanks very much. You have my address. Write to me. Do not engage with phone calls. That's a general rule anyway, because they're back and they're rampant at the minute. Absolutely rampant. By the way, well done to Ireland show jumpers. They qualify for tomorrow's final after finishing sixth in today's qualifying round. And the team are Shane Sweetman, Daniel Coyle and... Keane, and the great Keane O'Connor. Keane is there as well. Joe at rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And we should also, in the spirit of generosity, which is the spirit of the Olympics, by the way, I know people are following the general sports and the swimming is incredible, and the televisual swimming is absolutely incredible. I don't know how a lot of them swim pulling those banners and those flags behind them, but the televisuals are fantastic. But the best thing to watch in the Olympics is the table tennis. You have to see it. It is breathtaking. The speed, even when it's on slow motion, it's hard to follow it so fast. Have a look at it. Go into YouTube. It comes up on the Olympic channel. Just highlights, table tennis highlights. It's a much forgotten sport in Ireland, I think. I don't think we have anyone representing Ireland in table tennis. We used to have, and this is how long ago it was, because I can remember his name. We used to have Jim Langan. Is it Langan? It was Langan. Jim Langan, who was our table tennis champion. And I don't even know. I think Jim is alive. I remember he used to have a shop, a furniture shop down in Capel Street. But what has happened? Have a look. That's all I'm asking you to do. If you get a minute, YouTube it. Table tennis in the Olympics. And it is absolutely breathtaking. Also, the oldest competitor in the Olympics is 63 years of age. Okay? 63 years of age. And she's representing Luxembourg. Okay? Representing Luxembourg, and she's representing Luxembourg in the sport. Now, she was beaten, unfortunately. She's representing Luxembourg in the sport of table tennis. And her name is Ni Xia Lian, N-I-X-I-A-L-I-A-N. She's 63 years of age. Have a look at her playing table tennis. Okay, Anne Lodge, we give out the WhatsApp number every now and again. Anne Lodge is a female member of the Anglican clergy, as you know, and you know that you can have female clerics in the Anglican Church. And this is the voice note that Anne sent us.
Hi, Joe. I just wanted to support what your previous caller was saying about the difficulties that male Catholic priests have when they're walking down the street or elsewhere with their collar on. I'm a female member of the Anglican clergy, so regularly walk about town my collar on without any difficulty. But I know anecdotally that my male friends and colleagues who are priests would avoid wearing their collars publicly. They would, you know, tend to wear a scarf or take the collars out simply because they get hassle on the street. Certainly I, as a female priest, do not get hassle, but I know from friends and colleagues that they are wary of the kind of hassle that just appearing in public as a priest can attract.
Okay, thanks indeed. And Anne says, she has empathy for clerics who do wear the garb in public, and the attention sometimes, well, a lot of time misguided that it can attract. Okay, Joe, remember tomorrow we're in the Dolman Hotel in Carlow, just outside Carlow Town. Joe at rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
John Whelan is in Athy, Geraldine Road in Athy in County Kildare. John, the house beside you is vacant and derelict. How long has it lay that way?
Joe, for as long as we've been there or involved in our house, which is St. Jude's next door to it. Of course, St. Jude's, the patron saint of hopeless cases, the house next door. So it seems to be a hopeless case at the moment.
And it's been vacant for how long? 3 years, 5 years?
Four or five years, from what I know.
And who owns it?
The Kildare County Council.
And why won't they do something about it?
I don't know, Joe, because if it was in private ownership, it'd be after whoever owned it privately died or tidy it up or to do something about it, because they've got onto local landlords with empty properties and made them sell them or tidy them up and do something with them. But yes, it's okay for them to sit on property.
And is the property now, I presume it's now been vandalised, is it?
Of course it is, sure. It's becoming a focal point for local teenagers, especially in the summer months. And they have all the windows upstairs broken, and they're getting in and out. I say, by the time the council do turn around to do something with it, they're going to have to just knock it and start again.
And have you been on to the council? I presume you have, and on to councillors.
In fairness, we have a great group of local councillors here in Athy, and a few of them have been on to the council on it, and just not know that. They claim to have it earmarked for a couple of a one-bedroom studio apartment for older people that would be on the housing list.
Okay.
They're saying they won't do it until about 2026, which is another 2 years.
And there's a housing crisis, as we hear every
day.
There's
a housing crisis, yeah, Joe. And the house would have been bought. It would have been bought with public funds. And
So many people in emergency accommodation, which the taxpayer has to pay for it.
We're all paying towards it. And if it was run as a business, they would have either sold the house at this stage, because it's definitely increased in value, even with the state that it's in, especially with this vacant property grant. like if somebody was to buy it in the morning, they would avail of the grant. Okay. And
they
have
say,
no
they say Kildare County Council say they're going to build 5 social housing units, and they're procuring a design team. Houses due for delivery in around Christmas 2026.
Yeah.
There you are, John. That's your message. Okay. John, well done for highlighting it. I think it's a lot of areas. Where are the carpenters? Where are the plumbers? Where are the first fixers, second fixers, block layers? Are they there to build the houses? There's something gone seriously wrong with that whole system. Good to meet you, Maga. John, back to Marie Bourne and the birthday. Happy birthday to you. Marie, we've had no luck so far in finding Now, we'll continue, and I've consulted the Director General, and I've consulted the chairperson of the Public Accounts Committee, and I've consulted every leader of every political party, and they all agree. They all agree that you should be allowed to scratch the cards before treatment.
Okay.
On the clear understanding, Marie, that if a substantive amount is won, and if people come forward tomorrow and they're verified, we may have to do something different. So will you scratch away, Marie, for me? How many scratch cards do you have?
There's 6 here in front of me.
Quick,
now.
Get going. Number one. 3. You have to get 3 of any, isn't it? Quick. One done. Quick.
5 are on one.
Yes. 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 How many have you scratched now, Marie? She can't even wear it. Well, quick, Marie.
Let's see now here. Oh, I got 3 rings, €20.
Woo!
I got 3 rings, €20.
Yes.
And I got a fiver.
Yes.
Okay, and go to the next 3 now.
Yes, quick. It's like river dance.
Nothing.
We got river dance.
Still doing it.
Okay.
Nothing else. €20 and a fiver.
So you won 25.
Yeah, exactly. That's, grand.
Okay. How's your wrist?
Oh, grand, not a bother.
Okay. So we still have the lotto tickets for the Euro Millions.
That's
fairly lucky. Okay, Marie, hold on. Will you promise me, Marie?
Yeah.
You won't head for Dublin Airport or for Rosslare and get on the ferry with that money.
I don't think at this stage I would, Joe, after ringing you up at this stage.
Okay. You're a star. Tommy O'Sullivan was in sound. Stephen Higgins, Richard Stern was there as our producer, and Catherine Thomas is next. And just follow me up to Carla, will you, tomorrow? We'll see you in Carla. People do what people dare. Now Fitzwilliam, have a care. Fallen is your star low. Up with halberd, out with sword. On we go, and by the Lord, Peak McHugh's given the word. Follow me up to Carlo.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. The outlook just got even brighter with further reductions all summer. In store or at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.